You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I know firsthand what it's like to struggle. But I found the cure for binge eating, and now I help people all over the world lead binge-free, happy lives. And on the show, I am here to help you too. Imagine waking up and thinking about your day, not your diet. How amazing would that be? It is possible. I'm here to show you the way. Okay, so today we're going to talk about Mother's Day. If we have time, I'm going to open up the phone lines. If you're on the Instagram live feed, I'm now live streaming on Instagram and on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, I don't know what you're writing, but if you're on Instagram, I'm here. I can see any comments that you might have. So Mother's Day. Mother's Day is supposed to be a day of fun, joy, celebration, appreciation for all the amazing moms out there. But for many people, it can be a difficult and emotionally challenging day. We are bombarded with images of happy families and perfect relationships and all that mother-daughter bonding and or mother-son bonding. It can really be hard to match that with our own complicated reality. Maybe you never had a close relationship with your mother. Maybe you lost your mom, or you're estranged from your children. Maybe you're struggling with infertility, or you're a new mom feeling overwhelmed and isolated. Maybe you lost a child. Whatever your situation, it is okay to feel sad, angry, or even jealous on Mother's Day. It is okay to acknowledge that this day can be painful. So give yourself permission to feel your feelings. All right, so one of the oldest psychoanalytic jokes in the world, I am a terrible joke teller. I'm just giving you warning. I'm a terrible joke teller, but I'm going to tell the joke. Here it is. If it's not one thing, it's your mother. There we go. Our relationship with our mothers has a tremendous impact on how we see ourselves, and it affects our relationship with food. If we're raised in an environment with a nurturing and supportive mom, we're more likely to have a positive self-image, be able to soothe ourselves, comfort ourselves, have a healthy relationship with food. But if our mothers are controlling or overly critical or more, that can lead to a negative self-image and disordered eating habits and a disordered relationship with food. Because on some level, mothering equals nurturing. So the food-mother connection. Why do we turn to food when we're stressed, when we're upset, when we're lonely, even when we're tired? The answer lies in our earliest experiences of love and safety and bonding, which are tied to being fed as infants. When we see a parent feeding a baby, we witness an exchange of love, really. And our earliest memories, whether we remember it or not consciously, our earliest experience of being held and loved by our parents or a parent while being fed equals a sense of safety and security that comes to mean like an interwoven experience of eating and love. So we begin to associate food with those warm feelings of connection to another person. And as we grow up, we may unconsciously use food to rekindle those feelings of love and connection. When we're upset, when we're bored, turning to food can provide a sense of comfort and relaxation because it's in our experience and it's in our lived experience of, oh, if I do that, I'm going to feel that good, safe, cozy, warm feeling. All my cares will go away. We may not consciously think that, but unconsciously we think that. So food becomes a substitute for the soothing presence of another person. And remember, people can be unpredictable, unreliable, unavailable. Food is always there when we need it. And it provides that reliable sense of comfort and familiarity. And it gives us that sense of security in sometimes a very unpredictable world, especially these days. So it's really important to remember that our mothering experience, our experience of being mothered, has had an effect on our relationship with ourselves and with food. And when we become more aware of patterns, we can start to make changes that lead to a healthier relationship with food and a more positive sense of self. Yay! Easier said than done. And by the way, my shirt says Pink Freud, and you can't see it, but it says the dark side of your mom. I used to tell my husband that I could do very well with never hearing Pink Floyd again, because my father always used to play the dark side of the moon over and over and over again. So my husband found the shirt, Pink Freud, the dark side of your mom. I thought it was perfect to wear on a week where we're talking about Mother's Day and motherhood. So let's talk about the illusion of the perfect mother, the ideal mother. She is portrayed in the media as nurturing, loving, selfless. She's often viewed as responsible for the emotional well-being of her children, and the physical well-being of her children. And she's also managing the household and supporting her partner and probably working too. Oh, thanks, Carla Gasha. And I'm glad you like the shirt. Mothers are expected to be patient, kind, to prioritize the family's needs above all else. And Mother's Day can be a very bittersweet time for people who don't have anything close to that experience of an ideal mother. And this holiday, like I said before, it can bring up feelings of sadness and disappointment. And when we see social media posts and commercials depicting these loving and nurturing mothers and these wonderful families and these bonds of, oh, I love you, mother, I love you, daughter, kind of thing, it is a painful reminder for some of us of what's missing. And it can also trigger a lot of guilt and shame for not appreciating or for even resenting the mother you have, or for, you know, what you don't have on Mother's Day. For people who have lost their mothers, it can be especially difficult as you feel a profound sense of loss and grief. If you've lost a child, it can also bring up so many painful, painful feelings. There's a book, you may know it by the movie, Mommy Dearest. It's a memoir by Christina Crawford, and she talked about her difficult and abusive relationship with her mother, the actress Joan Crawford. And the term Mommy Dearest has become kind of a cultural reference for a controlling or abusive mother figure. And not all difficult mothers are that same level of horribleness, but there are several common personality types that are associated with, let's say, toxic mothering. And identifying the kind of mother you had can help you better understand yourself, and it can illuminate a path to creating change in your relationship with yourself and your relationship with food, your ability to nurture and comfort yourself. So let's talk about the common types of difficult mothers. In no particular order, there are intrusive mothers. So intrusive mothers want to know everything that's going on in their kids' lives. They read diaries. They snoop through text messages. They demand to know what their kids are doing or thinking at all times. And that does not change when their kids grow up. And these mothers might have the best of intentions. Remember, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, so they say. Intrusive mothers can damage your sense of autonomy and privacy. And when you feel like every move is being scrutinized and monitored, it makes you feel like helpless and even a little paranoid, like everyone is watching you. So you leave your house, you leave your intrusive mother, but it feels like the world is that way. By imposing their will on children and failing to respect their boundaries, so important, these mothers can inadvertently drive their children towards behaviors that are harmful to their health and well-being. So this kind of mother is often associated with withdrawing from others. For people with this kind of a mom, isolating is a way of keeping out intrusive people, intrusive questions, dealing with boundary violations, right? If you have this kind of mom, you expect people to be intrusive. You may tolerate people who are like that. And ultimately, the key to creating change is to create healthy boundaries and learn to assert yourself. Because if you withdraw from other people, you may turn to food as a substitute. You may feel lonely, but people are too scary. They could be intrusive. They could be in your business. So you might fill that loneliness, which is experienced as emptiness in our bodies. You can fill it with food. Now, no one is like saying that consciously. No one's like, okay, well, people are unpredictable and unreliable. So I am going to, I'm just going to symbolically fill myself with food to give myself the illusion of fulfillment. No, it's not conscious. It's out of awareness, but it's not out of operation. So it's something you want to think of, because when you make something conscious and you know what you're dealing with, then you can resolve it. If you think the problem is food, no, you're wrong. The problem is loneliness. The problem is emptiness. The problem is your difficulty with relationships, understandably. So if you had an intrusive mom, setting boundaries and communicating clearly with your mother or anyone else who has boundary issues can give you more of a sense of autonomy and safety and control. When you have control in your life, maybe you don't try to control food. And that helps you navigate the world in a healthier, more positive way. See how that works? See the connection? Okay. Then we have the mini-me mother. The mini-me mother, the mini-me syndrome, we'll call it. It's a parenting style that can really damage your sense of self and individuality. These mothers want their children to reflect them, to live up to their expectations of who their kids should be, instead of cultivating their child's unique personality and interests. I once knew someone who had twins, and they were just born, and she's already planning their future. She, the mother, was really into showing horses or horseback riding, or, I don't know what it's called. Dressage? I don't know, whatever it is. And so she was like, well, by the time they're three, they're going to start riding lessons. By the time they're five, they're going to start showing in their category. By the time they're 10, they will have won these medals. I mean, she had their whole future planned out. And I happened to see them, maybe 10 years later. And what had happened was one twin was like the good twin, and she was taking horseback lessons and riding lessons, and she was showing horses, and she was doing all the things. She was trying to be the mini me of her mother, because that was the way to win her mother's love. The other twin had gone the other way, and she was the bad twin, right? She was the one who didn't like horses. She had her own personality, and she was unlucky enough to be with a mom who couldn't cherish that and couldn't nurture that. She was, oh my gosh, why do I have someone calling me? All right. Who couldn't cherish that and couldn't nurture that. And she was labeled as the bad one. So as an example, Kelsey, she recalled wanting to learn how to play the drums. By the way, Kelsey is not her real name. Whenever I use people's names here or in my books, I am not using their real name. So Kelsey wanted to learn to play the drums. And her mother said, "Don't be ridiculous. I like the piano, not drums." Another mother told her daughter, "You can't vote Democrat. You can't vote Democrat. We're Republicans." So these types of mothers cannot fathom the idea that their children have separate wishes, ideas, beliefs. And the problem, there are many problems, but one of the problems with this kind of mothering is it can make you feel like you're not allowed to be authentic and true to yourself. Instead, you feel like you've got to conform to first your mother's expectations, like the horseback riding person, and her beliefs, which can be limiting and stifling. And this leads to frustration, resentment, and depression, all of which can be managed, coped with in a negative way by emotional eating or binging. So one way of rebelling against these pressures is through weight. So my client Annalise, she was 100 pounds overweight. She was covered in tattoos. And she said, she had like this spicy attitude. And she said, my mother wanted me to be skinny and look appropriate, whatever that is. Too bad for her. So for Annalise and others with this kind of mother, having a bigger body could be a way of saying, you know what? This is my life. This is my body. You can't control my body. But of course, that can be just as damaging as the mother's behavior. So it's important to assert yourself and differentiate yourself in a healthy and positive way, instead of in a way that hurts your body and sometimes your self-esteem. If your mother cannot recognize and accept your uniqueness, your specialness, then grieve what you didn't get. And then encourage yourself to pursue your own interests, to be true to yourself, to forge your own path in life. Because when you develop a healthy sense of self, a positive relationship with food and your body will follow. When you feel good about you, you can nurture yourself and care for yourself and respond to yourself and encourage yourself and support yourself and all the things. You don't need food to distract yourself from yourself. All right, next are indifferent mothers. There are many reasons why mothers can be indifferent. Maybe depression, maybe lack of interest in parenting, maybe a lack of nurturing in their own childhood and their own experiences. There are many reasons why someone is indifferent. But if your mother was indifferent, it makes you feel like you're not important. You're not valued. You might yearn for that level of connection and mothering and relationship that your mother can't give or won't give. And that's painful. It's painful, and it leads to a sense of emptiness that you might try to fill with food. So you might fill up on food as a way of expressing your wish for that kind of loving fulfillment that you never got. Recognize that the words that we use are so powerful, fulfillment. No, talk about filling up on food, unconsciously a way of feeling fulfilled when you're not relationally. You might use food to fill the void left by an indifferent mother. But then you feel humiliated and ashamed just for longing for that kind of love. And that, by the way, can sometimes lead to purging as a way of getting rid of the humiliation. Bulimia is also very symbolic. Eating disorders are symbolic. It's not about the food. It's about something going on within you that's getting expressed and enacted through food. So the key to change, if you had or have an indifferent mother, learn to be more nurturing and supportive toward yourself and not be indifferent to yourself. Don't be indifferent towards your emotions. Don't be indifferent towards your needs. Don't be your mother towards yourself. With time and effort, it is possible to heal the wounds of the past and to create a different way of being in relationship with yourself, to create a kinder, more loving way of responding to you. And when you do that, you don't need food as a distraction. Now we have the double whammy, intrusive and indifferent. How can those two things happen with one person? How can one mother be both intrusive and indifferent? Oh yes, it is possible. There are mothers who are both intrusive and indifferent, which causes a lot of confusion and a lot of pain. These mothers are overly invested in certain aspects of your life, like academic performance when you're younger, or what are you doing? What are you achieving? What's going on? And then they neglect other areas of your life, like emotional support and nurturing. So they're too much in your business in certain ways, And it's like they're not even there in other ways. And this inconsistency is not only confusing, it leads to a sense of isolation and disconnection and mistrust. You might feel like you're not allowed to express your emotions. You're not allowed to seek support. You don't trust anyone anyway. If they seem to be interested, oh, they could become disinterested. It makes it feel like everyone has a shadow side. If they're showing you one, they also have the other. If they're showing interest, they could be disinterested. If they're intrusive, they could just drop you at any time. Because our original experiences with our parents, with our mothers, forms the template of what we expect in our current life. That's why when people say, well, you're a psychoanalyst, come on, it's not all about the past. I'm like, you're right. It's not about the past. It's about how the past haunts your present, how the past is actually alive in the present. So if you had an intrusive, indifferent mother, maybe you're tolerating intrusive, indifferent people in your current life, or maybe you're expecting people to be that way. If you had a critical mother, maybe you're critical to yourself. So it's not about this happened in the past. It's about how did what happened in the past affect your current way of being in relationship with yourself and other people. And when you have an intrusive and indifferent mother, the double whammy, it can make you turn away from relationships completely and toward food because you feel like you can't trust anyone else to be consistent, to give you the kind of emotional support, emotional nourishment that you need. People are unpredictable. People are unavailable, but food is not. Food is predictable. It is available. As Randy said last week on Instagram, you know, if you go for some ice cream, it is not going to taste like olives. And remember, you deserve to be supported and nurtured in all areas of your life. When you give yourself the support you need, you stop using food as a source of comfort and distraction. So I want to check in. For a moment, anyone on Instagram, if you have any comments, any questions, now's the time. Please drop a comment or a question in the comment box. Love to know if this is relatable to you. What kind of mother did you have? I'm going to keep going because there are more. Okay. Then we have the little girl mother. The little girl mother is the mother who relies on her children to take care of her emotionally. They share their problems with their kids. They ask for their opinions. And I'm not just talking about kids as adults. I'm talking about kids when they're kids. They expect their kids to be concerned about their well-being and their lives. They expect their kids to take care of them. And they expect that more than they take care of their kids. When you have this kind of mother, you will feel like you've got to take care of your mother instead of being taken care of yourself by your mother. And when you're mothering your mother, nobody is mothering you, which can lead to a sense of deprivation and emptiness that can be incredibly difficult and painful to deal with. You may not even become aware of your own needs. You may not even know what you're feeling because you're so focused on taking care of your mother. So in other words, you take care of your mother and food starts taking care of you. So how do you change this dynamic? You learn to prioritize your own emotional well-being. You learn that you matter. You matter too. It is okay to say no to your mother or anyone else who's familiar like that, because when we have that experience with our mothers, we can gravitate towards similar people in our adult lives. We can automatically go into that, never mind about me. What about you? How can I be there for you? Let me take care of you. And then it's at your own emotional expense. And then you end up being deprived and empty. And again, food takes care of you. If you're always like putting all your energy out, give, 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 give. You're empty, you're depleted. And the only thing that comes in might be food. That's a problem. So instead of going on a diet, having more willpower, thinking about control, calling yourself a food addict, how about look at your relational dynamic and see how you can feed your soul? It is okay to say no to your mother. It is okay to say no to other people and to focus on your own needs and emotions. That does not make you selfish. That is called self-care. Selfish is nobody else matters but me. I'm the only person that counts always. Selfless, which is just as bad, it's the other side of the coin, is I don't matter at all. It's what everyone else needs that matters. That's not good either. Self-care is in the middle, and it's where sometimes you balance your needs with the needs of other people. Sometimes you meet your needs, sometimes you meet theirs. Self-care, very important. All right, moving on. Narcissistic mothers. Show of hands on Instagram. Who can relate that to this? Drop me a heart if you have had a narcissistic parent. This is by far the most common kind of parent that I see. Narcissistic parents are primarily focused on themselves, on their own needs, often at the expense of their children or anyone else. And these mothers kind of view their children as extensions of themselves. This might sound a little like the mini-me mother. There's some overlap in all of these categories. But it's like they demand that their children meet their needs and expectations rather than considering their children's own desires and goals. If you have a narcissistic mother, you may struggle with feelings of neglect, indifference, not mattering, mistreatment, emotional mistreatment, as you may feel like you're constantly overlooked or dismissed in favor of your mother's needs. You might feel like you're never good enough. You never can meet their high standards. Nothing is ever good enough, which means that you eventually interpret that as you are not good enough. You are never good enough, which causes despair. It's horrible. And in some cases, narcissistic mothers use their children as a way of boosting their own self-esteem instead of providing emotional support and nurturing to their kids. They may demand that their children achieve certain goals, certain milestones in order to reflect positively on them, rather than considering what is best for their kids. So know this, you deserve to be treated with love, respect, and compassion. Setting boundaries and learning to prioritize your own emotional well-being can be a very helpful first step in coping with the impact of a narcissistic mother or any of the mothers that I have talked about today. Randy's saying lots of those connect, but coming from my father because I never liked sports or the same music as him. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about mothers because it's almost Mother's Day, but you know, it's interchangeable with fathers. If you had a parent who treated you in this way and made you feel like if you were different, then there's something wrong with you, rather than no, you are a separate and unique individual who should be unconditionally loved and accepted and nurtured. And you don't have to be a do-over of the parent. You don't have to be a mini-me. You don't have to do really well and shine to make them look good. It's like I remember someone once had her parents, she got into some school, it was like a top 10 school, but it wasn't an Ivy League. And her parents, who were both narcissistic, instead of saying, oh my gosh, we're so proud of you, you work so hard, this is going to be a great experience for you, we're here to support you, they're like, oh, What? How are we going to tell people that you're not in an Ivy? Sheesh. And the important thing here is to be really conscious of doing this to yourself, criticizing yourself, judging yourself, feeling like you're not good enough because you're not up to someone else's standards, etc. Because again, we learn how to treat ourselves by the way that we are treated. And then we can tolerate that bad behavior from other people because it's familiar. So resetting your expectations from about other people and changing the way you relate to yourself is super important. And now we have the critical mother. Oh, I know her well. Critical mothers are focused on their children's flaws and shortcomings and often point them out in a critical and negative way. They use criticism as a form of control or manipulation, and they're trying to shape their children into the person they want them to be rather than accepting them for who they are. Or it's like they have no tolerance for their children of whatever age, children or adults, just being people, just being perfectly imperfect. And they point out flaws. If you get an A on an exam, they say, well, why didn't you get an A plus? If you get into a top 10 school, they say, well, why didn't you get into an Ivy? Nothing is ever good enough. They find something to criticize. They give you two shirts. You try on one. They say, what, you didn't like the other one? This actually has happened, right? I'm sorry, is it possible to try on two shirts at the same time? Like, they will find something to criticize no matter what. If you had a critical mother or father, you may struggle with feelings of inadequacy and low self-esteem. You may feel like you can never measure up to these high standards. Never, ever. Because you know what? You can't. And you know what else? Nobody can. Nobody can live up to these impossible standards of perfection, because the only thing that is perfect is, I like to say, an isosceles triangle, but any triangle. Geometry is pretty much the only thing that's perfect. When it comes to being a person, you can't be perfect. You are perfectly imperfect. But if you always feel like you are never measuring up, you are never living up to someone else's high standards for you, you're going to have some self-doubt. You're going to have a lack of confidence in your own abilities, in your own strengths. You might feel like you're constantly walking on eggshells around your mother. You're never sure when the next criticism or negative comment will come. Now, in some cases, critical mothers may be dealing with their own insecurities, and they may use criticism to deflect away from their own shortcomings. So they may be overly focused on your flaws as a way to distract from their flaws that they don't want to see. So that may be an explanation of this behavior, but an explanation is not an excuse. Just because you can explain why someone does what they do, it does not condone it. Remember, you are not defined by your mother's criticisms. Learning to develop a strong sense of self, self-worth, self-acceptance becomes a foundation that you can stand upon in the world, and it will lessen that criticism. It'll lessen the impact of that criticism. Remember, you deserve to be treated with love, with respect, and compassion, not just from other people, but from yourself. So important. How does this relate to food? Because when you are kind to yourself, when you are there for yourself, when you're compassionate towards yourself, when you're nurturing towards yourself, you make yourself feel better with words. Comfort words then work a whole heck of a lot better than comfort food. on Instagram, I want to mention that what you talk about really helps me out. I'm pretty harsh in terms of self-talk, and this led to binge eating. I want to say thanks. Your book is super helpful. Oh, it's super nice to hear that. Thank you so much. I am so happy that my book and what I'm saying here on the show and in all the other ways that I try to help people is making a difference, because negative self-talk is what underlines most binge eating or emotional eating. We end up saying nasty, horrible things to ourselves. And by the way, where did we learn it? Well, you can see where we learned it. When we speak to ourselves in that way, when we're judgmental, critical, nothing's ever good enough, dismissive, indifferent, slave driving to ourselves, then we turn to food to escape our own mean voice. It's tough to talk about because I'm a guy and you're brought up not to say, don't be a wuss. Exactly. You know, about a third of the people in my private practice and my coaching programs are guys. And this is something that I hear all the time. Guys are brought up to say, you know, man up. I once had someone tell me, I'm a guy. I don't have feelings. I'm a dude. He's like, well, I'm a dude. I don't have feelings. I'm not eating because of my feelings. I'm a dude. I'm a dude. You have feelings. You're a dude. You're human. Humans have feelings. So I want to assure you that you are not alone. In fact, there's someone here on Instagram who's also a guy. I'm sure you can relate to each other. Men are socialized as, don't have feelings. Don't be sad. Don't be vulnerable. Don't be affected. You can be angry. That's okay. Be mad. But nothing else is acceptable. And women are taught, be vulnerable, be sad, that's okay, but don't be mad. That's not ladylike, that's not nice. So we all have these messages that just interfere with our ability to recognize and process and respond to what we are feeling. And feelings are just reactions to situations. They're not character flaws. You're not a wuss if you cry. You're a person who's been hurt. I remember my daughter, who's 15 now, which is like, what? How did that happen? She's 15, but when she was in her little play group with her little friends from preschool, they were like 3 years old or 2 years old, or like there were two boys and two girls. And when the girls would fall down, everyone would be like, oh, honey, are you okay? Oh, you're okay. And your voice would go up this many octaves. Oh, are you all right? You're okay. But when a boy fell down, it would be like, oh, buddy, get up. Like, you're good. You're good, buddy. You're fine. So young to hear like these prohibitions against pain, physical pain and emotional pain. So I am glad you're here. And I'm here every Wednesday at 11. So keep coming back, keep reading my book. And thank you for your kind words. You're not a wuss, you're brave. You're a brave human. It takes a lot of courage to recognize and feel and express what we don't want to feel, to think what we don't want to think. That takes courage. We can't ignore our feelings. We can't positive think them away or gratitude them away. We can't drop them. We can't stuff them down. The only way to get rid of feelings is to feel them. All right, I've got a few more categories here. I don't know if I'll get through all of them, but as much as I can. Controlling mothers. Oh, these mothers try to control every aspect of their children's lives, from what they wear to who they spend time with. They are domineering. They are dismissive of their children's desires and opinions. They believe their way is the only way. And if this sounds like narcissistic mothers, yeah, there's, like I said, total overlap. Children of controlling mothers struggle with feelings of powerlessness, a lack of autonomy. They feel as if they have no say in their own lives. And this leads to frustration, lack of confidence, not trusting your own thoughts, not trusting your own decisions, not trusting your own mind, and not being able to assert yourself. And in some cases, controlling mothers may be motivated by a desire to protect their children. Yeah. Like, you know, if they keep them in a bubble, then they'll be safe, kind of a thing. But their methods are misguided, and we can't protect people forever. We can't keep them in a bubble. Believe me, my daughter's about to take driver's ed. But you know what? I can't keep her in a bubble. She's got to learn to drive. She's got to go out there in the world. We all have to, on our own terms, make our own mistakes, do our own thing. When you have a mother who tries to control you because she believes that by controlling your life, she's keeping you safe or ensuring that you make the right choices, then you never learn to trust yourself. This type of parenting can be very harmful because it prevents you from developing a sense of independence and self-reliance and trusting your own mind, your own wishes. Remember, you deserve to have control over your own life. If you don't feel like you have control over aspects of your life, that may be displaced onto food. Oh, I can't control anything in my life, but I can try to control food, which ends up just mimicking how out of control you feel in your life. You feel out of control with food. So learning, again, to set boundaries, to assert yourself in a respectful way can be a helpful way of coping with this kind of controlling mother. Remember, you have the right to make your own decisions. You have the right to live your life on your own terms. Yes, you do. Then we have addicted mothers. Growing up with an addicted mother means experiencing neglect, abuse, and instability. These mothers may struggle with addictions to drugs, alcohol, or substances, or other things, which can have a really intense impact on their ability to be parents. They can't provide their kids with emotional support, emotional stability. They can't provide them with consistency. Their own addiction causes them to prioritize their needs over those of their children. And if you had an addicted mother, you may have feelings of abandonment. The addiction essentially takes that mother away from you. She has a relationship with her addictive substance instead of with you. And children of addicted mothers may also have feelings of guilt because kids blame themselves. They believe they are somehow responsible for their mother's addiction. Kids are always blaming themselves. They're egocentric, naturally. Like, kids always think whatever's going on, it must be their fault. So the lack of emotional support or stability, or, you know, that leads to anxiety, depression, PTSD. Remember, you deserve to be treated with love, with respect, with compassion, and there is support available to help you navigate the challenges of growing up with an addicted mother. It can be incredibly challenging, but healing is possible. Healing is possible. And you deserve to give yourself the love and support that you did not get from your mother because she was incapable of it. I saved the best for last because this is ideal. Now I'm going to talk about the nurturing mother. Having a nurturing mother is a wonderful experience. It provides us with the emotional support and care that we need to grow and to thrive. A nurturing mother consistently shows an appropriate amount of curiosity, an appropriate amount of care about your emotional well-being, your physical well-being, but also allows you to have your own identity and supports you in your personal growth and your personal development. Children of nurturing mothers feel a sense of security. They feel comforted. They feel held in life and yet free because they know their mother's there for them. They know their mother cares about them. So they feel likable and lovable. Leads to a lot of positive outcomes, greater self-confidence, sense of autonomy, independence, strong sense of self-worth, self-esteem, likability, lovability. Even if you didn't have a nurturing mother growing up, it is never too late to cultivate a nurturing response to yourself. You can learn to treat yourself with kindness. You can learn to give yourself what you need and to be supportive and encouraging, just as you would treat someone else. What I see a lot are people who treat themselves one way, but they treat everybody else so nicely. Oh, you have a problem? I am here for you. What's going on? Let me talk to you. They give reassurance. They're encouraging. They're loving. They're lovely. But when it comes to their relationship with themselves, ooh, different story entirely. So learning to be gentle with yourself when you make mistakes, we all make mistakes, practicing self-compassion instead of self-criticism, so important. Setting aside time for self-care activities, so important. You deserve to be treated with love and care from yourself. And it is possible to develop a nurturing relationship with yourself, even if you didn't have a nurturing mother growing up. Ultimately, cultivating a nurturing response to yourself helps you overcome challenges, overcome difficulties, leads to a greater sense of happiness and fulfillment in your life. And then when things happen in life that aren't so great, because, you know, that's life, instead of coping with food or you know, coping in other ways that are self-destructive, you cope because you show up and nurture yourself. And keep in mind, there are two mothers, right? There are two mothers. You have the actual mom who raised us and dad. There are two dads too. But the actual parent who raised us and the one that we internalize. When you find a way to nurture, accept, support yourself, you're going to be less likely to use food to cope with sadness, emptiness, frustration, loneliness, or any other painful or upsetting state. You know, so one thing that you can do is just like, if you talk to yourself, especially if you talk to yourself in that you second person voice, you know, how could you do that? Nobody likes you. You're going to fail. You can't do this. That kind of thing. Is that familiar at all? If you talk to yourself in that you voice, that second person voice, whose voice is that? Is that one of the kinds of mothers that I just talked about? Is that how you're talking to yourself? First, you got to identify how that internalized mother is still within you and is still talking to you, only it's you. And it's you talking to you. So what was relational, someone else being judgmental, critical, dismissive, intrusive, all the things. Now, and you didn't like it at the time, right? You don't like the way they talk to you. Now you are talking to yourself that way. So one of the things you want to do first is recognize, is that your mother talking in your head? I have this plaque I used to have up in my office and it says, sometimes I open my mouth and my mother comes out. Which if you have kids, that's a scary moment, let me tell you. But we also do it to ourselves. We do it to ourselves. We speak to ourselves often the way we were spoken to. So one thing you can do is recognize when you're using that you voice, when you're saying things to yourself, when you're talking in second person to yourself and saying you this and you that and you, it's usually pretty nasty. Whose voice is that? Is that your mom's or your dad's? Is that someone you know? Because when you can identify that, you can start to challenge it. That shows you that there's an original wound that needs to be healed, your relationship with your mother. And it's important to look at that. but ultimately, it's important to remember that our mothers, like all parents, usually do the best they can with what they had at the time. They do the best they can given their own circumstances, their own upbringing, all of that. So while it's easy to look back and see the flaws in their parenting, some flaws are worse than others, it's really also important to approach the situation with empathy and understanding for yourself and for them. and to really heal the wound of the past, create healthier, happier lives. That doesn't mean going like, oh, she did the best she could. Oh, well, it's like, yeah, she did the best she could and her best sucked and it affected me. It's the difference between blame and explain. You know, blame is it's her fault. Explain is, this is how she was. This is how she is. This is how it affected me. And I need to understand that. And I need to heal in the service of change. So lastly, I just want to say, remember, you are not alone. If you struggle on Mother's Day, there are millions of people out there who are struggling just like you. And there is no shame in that. So take care of yourself on Mother's Day and every day. And know that you are loved and you are valued no matter what. So that is our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, psychoanalyst, here to help you create a binge-free, happy life. I am here live on LA Talk Radio every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And you can listen later wherever you get podcasts, but especially on Apple Podcasts. And if you would like a deeper dive into this topic and many others, check out my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in every format. Take good care. Stay curious, not critical. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.